If you like the Live Wild podcast and enjoy hunting-related apparel, I've got you covered. I just launched some great t-shirts, hats, and sweatshirts under my own Live Wild brand. You can find them now on my website, remywarren.com. I just want to say thanks again, everyone, for all the support, and I really hope you enjoy these designs as much as I do. Who knows? Maybe you'll head over to my website and find your next lucky hat. I'm Remy Warren, and I've lived my life in the wild. As a professional guide and hunter, I've spent thousands of days perfecting my craft. I want to give that knowledge to you. In this podcast, we relive some of my past adventures as I give you practical hunting tips to make you more successful. Whether you're just getting started or a lifelong hunter, this podcast will bring you along on the hunt and teach you how to live wild. This podcast is presented by Mountain Tough and Yeti. I partnered with Mountain Tough because a lot of the tactics and hunt styles I talk about in this podcast require you to be in the best physical shape you can. Their app is designed for hunters to get you ready for the backcountry or any hunt you have planned this fall. Yeti's been a longtime supporter of mine, and they make some of the toughest products out there that are built to last and they're built for the wild. Well, everyone, I'm back. We've got a new name, a new place, but it's going to be the same great tactics and real life stories to help make you a better hunter. I really just have to start by saying thank you guys so much. If you're listening right now, then you're really helping get this thing off and running. And I'm really excited to bring you the Live Wild podcast for a couple reasons. There's a few things that I really like about this podcast. First being, the name is way better than the last podcast. This was actually my first place name, but I pocketed it just in case I lost the name of the other one. Now, my goal is still the same. With this podcast, it's going to be to share some fun stories and give you real tips from things that I've just picked up from countless days of field. Now, if you listen, I want you this to be very educational, but also entertaining. So let's just jump back in with an episode that I titled, The Eyes Have It. When it comes to spot and stock hunting, I like to take this more aggressive approach. Or it might seem more aggressive, but in fact, it's just very calculated, knowing what I can and can't get away with. So as you move in on an animal, it's their senses that are going to get you busted. Their nose, their ears, and their eyes. So today, I'm going to be talking all about my strategy for not getting spotted. And using this mantra that I have, that I say, if you can't see their eyes, they can't see you. I'm going to go through my stalking process and how I've used this tactic to pull off bold stalks in what might seem like impossible situations. But before we do that, I want to share the story of going unseen on a big mule deer buck with a trad bow while wearing blaze orange during the general rifle season. If you know much about me, you know that I like to hunt with a lot of different things, but my bow is the primary way that I hunt. I love bow hunting. The majority of my hunts are with a bow. And that could be a compound bow, but also I love hunting with traditional archery gear, either longbow or a recurve. And the thing that I love about traditional bow hunting is you just got to get so close. I'd say my effective range is, I don't know, maybe say 30 yards, but everything that I shoot at is definitely sub 20. I like to get as close as possible. And I love that challenge of having to get close. One thing about the bow hunting is sometimes there's a season that runs into like a general rifle season, and I still choose to continue to hunt with my archery gear. A few years back, I had a special mule deer tag in Montana, and it was now general rifle season. And I decided that, well, I was actually filming this hunt for Solo Hunter, and I really wanted to take a deer with my recurve bow, and I wanted to get it on film. And that was really important to me. And so I decided, against all odds, I was going to film this bow hunt with a trad bow and try to get in tight, get in range. And not only that, but look for a really mature buck. So I really kind of stacked the odds against myself. But I kind of think of this hunt as probably one of my, if I was just say like, somebody's like, what's your greatest hunting feat? What's the something that you're most proud of? Is probably this moment. Because I really learned how to, there's a lot of things that I had to control in order to pull this off, especially self-filming. And one of those things was, you know, tricking all the senses. And the hardest one that I found to trick at this close range and with the camera and all this stuff is to really pay attention to their eyes. Now, for the longest time, I've always had this saying, this mantra that I've used time and time again. And it's like, as I stalk things, I have these things in my head that I tell myself because it keeps me focused and keeps me paying attention to certain things. And one of them is, if you can't see their eyes, they can't see you. And essentially this thought of, you know, being able to block the eyes of the animal that I'm stalking. And knowing that, like, if everything else is right, then I can make some moves that I might not get away with otherwise. Because when I'm stalking with a camera and a bow and all these other things, everything has to be perfect. But I also have to make some moves that might be more difficult, that maybe people would hold back and not make this move. And I have to make that move knowing that this is my chance and this is when I have to go. So on this particular hunt, I was hunting a specific buck that I'd seen earlier. I actually kind of passed him on earlier with my, I don't know what I was thinking. You know, as the season goes on, you're like, you start to get something in your head. And at first I was like, I'm going to bow hunt this. And then I started to think, no, I'm going to hunt this with my recurve. And then I'm going to hunt this with my recurve and film it. And it just became this thing that was now my obsession. So there's this one particular buck that I'd been stalking and trying to get on multiple times throughout the season, but I just didn't have the right opportunity. It kind of came down to the wire. So I went through archery season. Now I had to hunt in general rifle season where you have to wear blaze orange. And obviously camouflage does great, but in my opinion, with the way that I like to stalk animals, if I'm relying on my camouflage, then I've already messed up. The animals already see me. So it doesn't really matter sometimes what I wear. Having that blaze orange vest over my camouflage didn't really matter because my stock plan was if I've got busted, I would get busted either way. So I just got to go unseen. Now, fast forward. Oh, there's actually this one interesting part where you've probably seen it. I may have talked about it before, but I was turning the camera around filming myself talking about looking for a deer. And in the camera, you can see this deer pop over the ridge. I then turned the camera off, didn't actually notice it, looked back behind me. This deer kind of snuck up behind me and was on the ridge behind me. So I'm like, oh crap. So I used the hill as the obstructed approach. I can just see the antler tips of the buck moving behind me. I crawl in, I actually set the camera up, and the camera was higher than I was. So I got, there's a clip on my YouTube channel where I'm crawling up and it's like, then I raise up and then I just didn't get a shot at the buck and the buck moves off. Not a shot I was comfortable with, and it was a nice 4-point buck. I would have taken the deer if I had what I felt comfortable with, a shot. And the buck moved off. So we'll fast forward to the end of the season. The deer are rutting. Now they're a little more stupid this time, so I could get away with a little bit, but what I was doing was I was kind of pushing it a little too hard where I needed to get in, but the does were spotting me. The bucks really didn't give a rat's rear end on what I was doing, but the does would spot me, they would move, and then they would take the bucks off. So I really had to be careful and block the eyes of these deer. So I watched the deer until they got to this one hill where I was obstructed, the wind was coming down, so I couldn't make an above approach, but they were moving so much that I just needed to use the available cover that was there. Well, they got to this point where there's some live trees. I was like, that's my approach, because then I can start blocking the does a little bit better. I get around, go from the bottom, and start sneaking in the bigger bucks on this one particular doe, and I just keep putting these trees and the rocks in between myself and the deer, keeping their eye, like, just, there's many, many points where this doe would be out. I could see her whole body, but I just used this tree to block her eyesight, and then moved in and set the camera down, waited. As things moved, I would make sure that I was completely unseen. Then they would do something else. Then I would maybe have to crawl for this certain section. And then it got to this point where they went behind this one hill. Then I used that as an approach to move fast, to get in close. And I got in close and then waited and set up. The doe started to walk out. The buck surely followed. I drew back, locked my anchor. Everything just felt right. I let that arrow sail, hit the buck. The buck ran down the hill. And there I just shot a really big deer, self-filmed, with my trad gear. During the general rifle season, wearing blaze orange, just using that thought of blocking their eyes to get in close, to get into, you know, traditional bow range on an incredible buck. If you can't see their eyes, they can't see you. This is something that I've said for a very long time, and it's helped me a lot making sure to get in and go undetected. Now, I like to have these little mantras because what it does is it really focuses in my stalk plan and my hunt plan and allows me to kind of get away with certain things that I might not try otherwise. And we're going to get into that here in a little bit. But this is a tactic I started saying, and I used it especially while I was guiding. Maybe I'd sneak in with a client that doesn't have a lot of spot and stalk experience. Maybe he's never even stalked something, needs to get within bow range. And I'm like, okay, we're too close at this point for two people to stalk in. The wind's good. You just got to remember to be quiet. And then remember, if you can't see their eye, they can't see you, because it gave the person something to focus in on and kind of really hone in on, like, okay, every move I make, I need to block that eye to go unseen. At the root of it, it seems super simple, but this strategy works because you're able to focus in on the one small part of the animal that does all the spotting. And by implementing a thing that I like to call a block, there's ways of being unseen and potentially being more aggressive, opening up a lot of stalking opportunities and options. So let's talk about these blocks. I identify kind of five major blocks. So the first is going to be vegetation or obstruction. That would be something like brush or a rock. The other is topography, just the way that the hill is and where those animals are at. Then the next would be hill pitch. So this is the steepness of the hill that the animal's on. The fourth would be line of sight. So this is just wherever their body position is, what they're actually able to see. And then the last block is what I'd call a body block, where it's their actual physical body that's blocking their eyesight. So we're going to go in and kind of dive deep into each one of these types of blocks and how to use it. So the first is vegetation and obstruction. When you're looking at where an animal's at, vegetation and obstruction is anything solid that can block that one small eye, right? And we have our binoculars on us. We can actually kind of use those as an advantage to see, okay, what can they see? Can I see their eye from where I am at? Because if not, if I focus on that one little spot, it's really going to tell me exactly how much I can get away with. Now, vegetation and obstructions, anything out there, could be a tree, could be a bush, could be a rock in varying sizes as well. Could be a giant ponderosa or a small 1 foot size rock, or even just a little bit of brush cover, something that maybe is hard to see through, like the limb of a juniper. It doesn't matter what it is, but it's just these different things that are out there. And we're going to focus in on those when we're planning our stalk. So we look at a hillside and we go, dang, man, this deer is out in the open. But there's this one juniper tree, or it's by this certain juniper tree, where it's probably going to have trouble seeing up above it because it's so thick. Or maybe, you know, there's this one rock that it's bedded in front of or behind, or there's this rock off to the side. So we're going to start to think of, okay, is that enough to conceal my body and just block that one thing, a 2-inch space on this deer's head, its eyeball. The next is going to be topography. So this is anything out there, like essentially, and think of it in the grand scheme of even just maybe you're rifle hunting, maybe you just need to make an approach and get close. You've got a deer on a hill. Okay, what portion of everything that I'm looking at in this topography is going to completely conceal my body? So it might be, oh, the backside of the hill. That would be using clearly topography, a ridge where you can get down in the gully, and that's going to block your body from being seen. It's going to allow you to move as well. And the topography plays a big factor in getting kind of even before you get into a stalk, getting into position, especially when it comes to rifle hunting or just getting into a position where you can make a stalk. If you're bow hunting, the topography plays a huge factor. So it might be something like, okay, here's a contour in this flat country. Maybe here's a ditch. This is a small ditch out in the prairie. You're hunting antelope. You can get in this one little cattle ditch and get out of sight. There's been so many times when I'm stalking pronghorn antelope, and it's one ditch is the difference. It's enough topography where I can get out of sight and make my move and get a lot closer. It's also something like figuring out, okay, here's where the animals are. Here's a way that I can make my approach. Maybe it's the other side of the ridge across from them where I can get completely out of sight. I can move fast and then get into a closer position to maybe make a shot or make another move. Also, the type of topography and the varying size of the topography is going to depend on the type of speed that I can move at when I'm planning that stalk. So let's imagine we've got some deer, right? And they're moving up the canyon. So like, okay, the deer are moving up the canyon, they're on their feet, and I need to get within 300 yards or less for this rifle shot, but they're moving, right? So what's that gonna mean? If I wanna get in to get a shot, I have to move pretty fast. If I'm moving fast, I need to be completely unseen and somewhere that I can stand up. So I'm gonna look for, okay, maybe I drop down the backside of the ridge that I'm on and I can hustle, I can move fast, but then I can slowly pop back up and keep an eye on them. Or I go around the backside of the mountain where I'm completely unseen and pop over the other side. It's just kind of depending on what the topography is like is gonna depend on how fast I can move as well as how much I can stand or run or get out of sight. And I'm gonna use that topography to block essentially their line of sight. So this next one is hill pitch. This is something maybe you've heard me talk about in videos and maybe didn't even notice. I was like, oh, because of the pitch of the hill, I was able to do X, Y, Z. What the hill pitch is this the steepness of the hill. Now, the steeper, I actually really like when an animal puts themselves in really steep country when I'm bow hunting. And here's the reason why. The reason is because I'm able to get a lot closer because the hill itself obstructs the animal's view from me. Now, if I'm rifle hunting, the hill pitch might be the opposite, right? If it's super steep, I know that I'm gonna have to get super close when maybe I don't wanna get close. I might plan a different stalk thinking, oh, well, I'm not gonna be able to see them from the same hillside. I gotta get across and shoot across the canyon where I have a better line of sight, better view. But the hill pitch is extremely important to understand and really important for planning your stalk. So here's a few things that I think about. Depending on how steep the hill is, the steeper the hill is, the harder it is to see above and below you. Now, it's always on a steep hillside. It's a lot harder for the animals to look up than down for the most part. One, it's less natural for them to look up, and two, it's a lot easier for you to come down from the top. So I always try that approach if I can come down from the top. But that's not always the most optimal option. When the hill is really steep, it actually lends itself for you to be sneaking in from below, except they're mostly looking that direction. So it depends on what else is on that hill. But I would say a lot of the animals that I've taken have been using the pitch of the hill itself as an obstruction from their eyes. And I like to pre-plan this and understand, okay, how far or how close am I gonna have to get to be able to see what I'm stalking. One way that I do it is I'll take my topo map out, or maybe I'm already on the hill that the deer is on, but I'm out of range. So let's just in this instance, we've got a mule deer bedded on a really steep hillside, okay? And I've got the wind's coming from the top, so I just gotta crawl up from below, and that's just how it's gonna be. And it looks like there's maybe one bush below it, so I might be able to use that to draw, or I can just use the pitch of the hill to draw out of sight. As I stalk in, or before I stalk in, when I'm on the hill with that same pitch, I could either pull out my topo map and say like, okay, here's this hill that I'm on's the same, or just give me an idea, or it just looks the same. What I'll do is I'll take my rangefinder, I'll stand up and I'll range and I'll see what's the furthest I can see when I'm standing on this hill pitch. Then I'll go to my knees and say, what's the furthest I can see of this hill on my knees? And then I'll maybe even lay down or get lower and say, okay, what's the furthest I can see? So what that's telling me is before I even make my stalk, I'm gonna know what kind of ranges are at various heights that I'm at. And that's gonna tell me, okay, look, man, if you crawl, I can only see, the hill's steep enough where I can only see 20 yards when I'm kind of in this crawling position. That lets me know that I can probably crawl in on this animal that looks like in the wide open, just using the pitch of the hill as cover from their eyes. The next is gonna be their line of sight. So what this is it's depending on the position of the animal. If they're bedded, right? They're bedded, as they move lower, their eyes can see less because they're closer to the ground. Same with us. When we stand up, we see more. As we get lower, we have less line of sight. So we can gauge based on where the animal is and then how they are positioned. So if they're bedded, then I know, okay, I actually have a little bit more leeway. Maybe I can crawl a little more. Maybe I can use that hill pitch. Maybe I can use other things that are gonna obstruct their view better. If an animal's bedded, a lower bush is gonna block you completely, whereas if they're standing, they might be able to see over the top of it and it won't block you. So I use this and I gauge the position of the animal and the line of sight from where they're at to help plan my stalks. I also need to think ahead, right? Now, if that animal stands up, am I all of a sudden gonna be in the open if what I'm using to block their line of sight is no longer there? And that's something to think about as I move in, as I start to stalk. Now, the last type of block is a body block. So this is actually them using their body to block their eyes. This might be a motion where their head's down feeding and they've got their butt to you. There's been some times, I actually remember this one time where I was stalking in on this deer and it was super open. And it got up from its bed. I was laying down and the deer just got up and started feeding, right? But it started feeding away. And as it's feeding away, it's just constantly getting further and further. But I noticed that its head was down a lot. And I essentially just kept its butt in between its head on the ground and me and was able to move fast. It would twitch its tail. And every time it would move its tail, I knew that it was going to probably make some kind of step. I would just get down. And the deer would pop its head, look around, take a few steps, then I'd move again. And I ended up getting within range, getting set up, I think it was like 40 yards, got down, got ready. The deer made a move, turned broadside, shot the buck. So there's a lot of times when you can use this body block of, okay, it's in the open, there's these things going on, but there's something blocking its eyes. I've got everything else right, the wind, the sound, I just have to trick their eyes, and you can kind of make some more aggressive moves when something is blocking what they used to look at. Now, one thing you want to look out for when talking about a body block, the back of their head is not a body block. Sneaking up from behind them, it's when you think of something like, remember when your mom would be, hey, she's got eyes in the back of her head. Well, most ungulates essentially do have eyes in the back of their head. By being set on the side of their head, they can see a portion behind their neck. And so using their head as a body block doesn't work. I know it seems like it might, but it really doesn't. So it's more using their entire body to block their eyesight. But when you add all these things together, you're able to kind of better predict ways that you can move in and go undetected, go unseen. And many of them can kind of be, in many ways, a bolder move of thinking from the onset. When you're looking at planning the stock, you go, geez, it looks too open. It looks like there's no cover. It doesn't look like I can get in. But then as you start to pick it apart and think of all these things of just blocking that eye, that one eye, a small 2-inch thing, if you can get something that completely you can't see, then you know that it can't see you. It's telling you this is what the animal can see by looking and focusing in on their eye itself. To do this, as I'm stalking in, I use my optics a ton. I zoom in and go, okay, when I'm here, right, and I anticipate my body and my shoulders in this, how much can I move? How much can I see that actually blocks the eye? If I've got a big tree, okay, I put the tree behind its head. And every time I make a move, I think to myself, okay, block the eye, block the eye, block the eye. You know, or block the whole animal, that's great. But if you start pinpointing and focusing on the eye, you can kind of get away with a lot more. One thing you want to start to think about too is anticipating movement. Now, if you're stalking a bedded animal, what happens if that deer gets up and moves? Are you now going to be exposed? Are you now going to be in a position where that block isn't going to work? And that is the case. So if you're making a really bold stalk on a bedded animal and you're using one certain thing to block its eye, to block that eyesight, well, what happens when it gets up and moves? That does happen. And when that happens, this is where blending in and freezing work really well. Blending in using your camouflage. I know the whole point here is to not be seen, but I will say that I have found in my years of hunting that there's been many times where my camouflage saved me, where I blend enough that they don't even notice that I'm there. And that's just a combination of not moving, and not moving is probably the biggest factor, and then using that camouflage to blend in. I remember specifically one time when I was absolutely saved by just blending in well. I was stalking these bull tar in New Zealand and I was coming down. This is like an all day stalk. I mean, I spotted them from the river valley up at the top of the mountain. They're all bedded in this little pocket. I watched them feed in the morning and they generally like start low and then they move up in the morning and you're just constantly chasing them. So I watched where they went and I get up into position where they're at. It's starting to get evening time because it took me so friggin' long to get up there. And the tar start filing out. And I was using this big rock outcropping to just block where they were at. And I was coming up from the bottom, which is pretty difficult on mountain species because they're very aware of what's below them. But if you get above them, sometimes you can kind of trick their eyes and they don't really look for you, or they're more curious. But coming up from below is tough. And I had this rock outcropping and then they start feeding out. And I just lay up against the rock and I'm in the dead wide open, but I don't move. I'm camouflaged. And they just, like, I swear they just looked through me. It was like, I was like, I just felt so confident. I was like, they don't see me. This is awesome. And then I waited for them to actually move down below me, and I restocked and was able to get a shot. But freezing and not moving can be the saving grace of, you know, blocking that eye. It's under this threshold of perception. So if their eye sees you and you're moving, you're going to get spotted, or you might get in that position where, oh, I messed up. Something happened. They see something. Freeze. Don't move. Lay down. Don't move. Don't keep looking. Just wait. Let them calm down. Let them go back to their thing. And you're going to get another chance to block that eye and continue your stalk. When I talk about making a stalk and pushing the envelope, the whole thought of blocking the eye is I like it thinking it in my head, because what it tells me is I can now know what that animal's seeing. I can know if they're seeing me or not going to see me, if I'm going to have to move lower, if I can move faster. It's just a really good way to kind of gauge what's going on. And one thing you want to think about, if maybe you're on a stalk, it's like, okay, I've got limited time. It's going to move. It's a marginal stalk, but I'm getting close. I need to push the envelope. Remember, you don't have to block the whole animal. There's been so many stalks where it's been a deer or an elk, and I just put one tree on its head, the rest of its body's open, and I move in. Now, this is also really key if you're doing any other kind of hunting, especially when it comes to bow hunting, but any kind of hunting where you need to draw. You have to remember that this whole blocking the eye thing, the eye is normally what's going to detect you in that crunch time when it's time to draw and make the shot. Of course, you know, being heard, something clanking on your bow, something clanking on something, but you have to follow this all the way to the end. So many people make the mistake of getting in close. You're like, oh yeah, I'm here, I'm 30 yards. Okay, now I'm gonna draw. And that's when they get busted. Whether you could even be stand hunting and here comes a deer below you, or you call in a bull elk and you draw at the wrong time, that's what's gonna get you busted. So you have to remember this tactic all the way to the end. But it's really good to think about when you're stalking in and you get yourself in a position where, okay, I've gotten position, I can put myself where I can block the eye now drawing. So that might be if I'm using, let's say, the slope of the hill, I can get down low, I can draw back, I get anchored, and then I slowly raise up, in which case I can settle my pin in and have enough time to make a shot. Same thing if a bull elk's coming in, he's walking in, he's bugling, there's one tree, as soon you're frozen, you aren't moving, as soon as he starts to walk into that tree where his eyes covered, draw back, and as he steps out, you're already at full draw, thump, arrow's released, shot is made. One thing is, if you're thinking about that eye, you're focusing in on that small point, and it's really gonna help you detect when you can make the right movements, the things you can do, and help you push the envelope to get close and make a good shot. I just first want to start out by saying I'm just so thankful for all of you. I really am. I wouldn't be doing this podcast without you guys. And I just want to say thank you so much for the support already. You know, having to kind of start over and rebuild this podcast can be kind of tough, but I'm really thankful for the support that I have. And, you know, if you enjoy the podcast, I would love, just if I was to ask anything, I'd love for you to share it with your friends and on social media or whatever. Because I think the biggest thing is just letting people know that the podcast is somewhere different. I've had a lot of people reach out this week and be like, oh, I'm already subscribed to your podcast. Like, why aren't I getting the new ones and whatever? So just letting people you know that you have to go somewhere else, and it's at this new name, new place, same awesome podcast. And we're going to be throwing in some new stuff here coming up soon too, so that I think you're really going to like. So I really just want this to be a place of a value add for you. If you're getting into hunting, if you're a lifelong hunter, if you're just enjoying hunting stories or whatever, I want it to be something that's entertaining and educational. I also want a lot of your guys' input, because I want to build this for everyone out there. But in order to do that, you know, we got to let people know that it's a new place and you got to go do something different, and it can be a pain, but I really appreciate everybody that has. If you're listening to it, my big ask would be just to help out and subscribe wherever you listen. Just hit that subscribe button. Super easy to do. If you listen to multiple places, like you got iTunes, you got Spotify, you got Stitcher, subscribe in all those places. You know, it doesn't take much to do, and it really helps us out. Also, I'd say if wherever you listen, there's the option to drop a rating or a comment, please do. And I'd love to read some of those as I go through. I'll read some from different places. You know, I'll pull a few of those comments out as we go further down the line. I'd love to read some of your comments on here. And just, I thank you guys in advance for doing all this, because It really helps me out, and I love to be able to just give you guys this content and keep building this podcast for all of us. I kind of think of it as like a very tight-knit community. The hunting community is so awesome, and I just thank you guys so much for the support. I really do appreciate you. So this week, we talked about the eye and how to go unseen. Next week, we're going to continue on this theme of senses by talking about the sense of smell, but not the animal's sense of smell. We're going to talk about the hunter's sense of smell and how you can utilize your nose to be more efficient. If you've been elk hunting, you've probably been in a scenario where you've smelt elk. Oh man, I smell elk. They're so close. I'm going to teach you how to utilize that to your advantage and be more successful. So until next week, my best advice is going to be make sure to block that side eye. I'll catch you all later.